duh, duh, duh. Oh, dude, I actually hear it. Duh, 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 duh. Da 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 da.
Dun dun dun. What's up, dude?
You.
Hey. Not much. How you feeling?
Cool, cool, feeling chill.
Thanksgiving was yesterday.
Yeah, fire, fire, fire.
It was a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I didn't eat too much. Just like ate just about too much.
Yeah.
And then stopped. I was like, nice.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
So we're back.
Yep.
And so we're talking, trying to figure out what we want to do, what we want to talk about.
Yeah.
And we're like, yo, why don't we talk about this one dude, Rabindranath Tagore, who's like, what is he like? Do we have a Western example of this dude that we could give?
I would say probably no. I don't think I know of any Western example.
So the dude basically rewrote was Bengalese culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like hugely prolific artist, poet, author, like basically if you rolled Stephen King, the Beatles, mm-hmm. Elvis, and like Sugar Hill Gang in one, and like, but he was like Indian. Yeah.
I don't think I remember that much about him too.
So we were looking at him. We didn't see any good documentaries to watch, and then we saw this one where like Einstein and Rabindranath Tagore. We're in a picture together, and we were like, yo, why don't we do Einstein? I was like, yes, why don't we do Einstein?
Yeah.
So now we're going to meander around Einstein and see where we get lost at. So what have you been thinking about?
Yeah, pretty cool. Watching the Einstein documentary, talked about his personal life and his public life too. And he had a really focused mind in terms of just knocking it out, and in terms of just going at a specific purpose, I think the universe converges into a human being when it is time for the next process of human evolution to take place. And sometimes that burden and that weight is too much for just regular human life. That regular human life has to be sacrificed in that prospect. I think Alfred North Whitehead, there's a really cool quote by Alfred North Whitehead where he says, like, every new discovery is, like, you know, let me not even use that quote, but,
mm-hmm.
It's more about, like, I think sometimes, you know, when, there's another leap to human evolution and existence, there just has to be, there's gonna be some sacrifices, especially I think in an individual's personal life, you know, Einstein's personal life and his personal family life. I wouldn't say it was top notch, you know. I think he paid a dear price for his outwardliness in terms of focusing on a single project throughout all his life, that he wasn't able to be the typical example of a father or a spouse
no.
or a husband, you know. But I do respect the fact that there are just some times when human evolution thrusts itself upon certain individuals that everyone around them would have to pay the price for.
Interesting.
Potential future grace, in a sense.
Yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I think that's happened quite a lot of the times. I think it happened with people like Mozart. I think it happened with Isaac Newton. I think it happened with Einstein. I think to a degree, it's probably happening with maybe someone like Jordan Peterson. But I mean, you never know who these people are or are going to be until like. the eventuality of everything, you know, until like the end of everything, so to say. It's like
manifested.
Yeah, as they manifest. At first, you know, Einstein's teachers, they thought he was like.
He was slow.
Yeah, they thought he was stupid.
Like, he would take a long time with these math problems, and, like, his professors or his teachers would be like, this kid is slow at solving math, except he was, like, taking whatever elementary math he was dealing with and trying to find better ways of doing it.
Right.
And he would just, like, he would, like, bully his teachers where he'd, like, give them an equation that he knew they couldn't solve, but, like, he had the answer to.
Totally. I think it just superseded and went by the fact of just trying to get good grades or trying to get approval from someone else or from something or trying to get some kind of worthiness. I think it just superseded all of that to the point where he was at the point of trying to figure out the actual point of the math and the mathematics and the whole entire system in itself of solving equations and all that. And so he was really a master in a student's body before anybody could really truly realize it. And so, and the price that one has to pay for that kind of thing is that to just constantly go through all of that, knowing what you are without being able to express it while focusing on your own work personally. And so it takes on the burden of like the human race in a sense, but without the human race really knowing even who you are.
What do you mean by it takes on the burden of the human race? So I get your point where you're talking. So I just want to make sure I get it. So you're talking about how, like, if you're a child prodigy, but more specifically, if you're a child master, you're running two games at once. You're running the game of mastery itself, and you're running the game of proving your mastery without the benefit of time, which you have zero control over. Because if you're old, it's easier to believe if you're a master. But if you're young, you know, you're young. So insofar as that's happening, you think running those two simultaneously is a way in which you, as an individual, kind of take on what exactly?
Yeah, so the burden of the human race.
Burden of the human race, yep.
In the sense of you're doing something that's going to benefit the entire human race without them even realizing that it's going to benefit them because they don't even know what it is that you're working on. So it's like you're actually taking on a burden without people realizing that it is a burden. So you always appear crazy or deluded or delusional. You know, it's like in the sense of Bill Gates working on Microsoft before realizing that we wanted computers. You know, it's putting yourself into a hole and dedicating yourself to the hole and not really caring what comes out on the other end. Not because you don't care, but because there's just something that's compelling you towards it. And so, it's like something just converges, I would say, the entire human will just converges into certain individuals that pushes the entire humanity forward in the sense that we can hardly even conceptualize what it is that they're doing or what it is that they're undertaking until the end result of it. You know, it's like Steve Jobs basically dedicating his whole life to things like Apple or the iPhone. And, you know, it's like there's just a force of will that pushes and thrusts the individual into something that they themselves know is going to be necessary or needs to be necessarily expressed in humanity. And when they do that, you know, there's a lot of sacrifices that come with it. But
yeah, that's the thing, is like when you're pursuing something that extraordinary, like it necessarily has to be accomplished through extraordinary means, which oftentimes can result in like a net increase in human suffering.
Yeah, it's like
even on a temporary basis.
Yeah. It just goes back to the thing of like you know, everything a man does has a good side and a bad side. And that's what Carl Jung said. And in the book Ion. And it's just that everything really is like a trade-off in a sense. And human beings don't necessarily pick to be born. And so when an individual is brought into life, they come to face with, for example, things like force of will that is just converged on them, like genius, in a sense. Like, I don't think people pick to be geniuses.
Mm.
Sometimes I think you can, in a sense. But I don't think people pick. I don't know. For that thing of genius, I don't know if people pick to be geniuses or not, because I think it stems from what are you willing to sacrifice.
Yeah, I think the question is, well, it's like you said, the true genius necessarily forsakes everything else except that which the person has genius for. So, like, if you're Einstein, the only thing that matters is unraveling the laws of the universe. If you're Mozart, the only thing that matters is the symphony.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, like, these are the people that make civilization almost certainly great or worth it, in a sense. But even during the process of that, their creation can often become a master and a destruction. A source of destruction.
Their creation can become a master?
Yeah.
So, like, their creation can become tyrannical, in a way?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the iPhone, you know?
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
Yep.
And, like, Facebook,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, these are the things that move civilization forward, you know? If we went into the bushes and we wanted to talk to humans who are out of touch with humanity... and we're going to introduce them to civilization, the first few things we'll show them are, like, things like food, water, whatever, that are, like, different for the kinds of food and water that they already have. But then after that, we'll show them things like iPhone and computers, because those are the things that we would regard as civilization, in a sense. So it's like those people who thrust themselves into those fields and those dedications and that kind of single-minded focus to just point out one huge thing that's going to be large, relatively, or potentially for the human race and civilization.
Potentially, you could introduce something that is potentially bigger than anything else that's ever been.
Right, and just the fact of that potential gives such a huge burden on the individual that almost everything else has to be expensed and sacrificed. So...
we're going to take a brief break real quick. Do you need water, my guy?
Sure.
I bet. I got you. Now, one thing I was thinking about, though, was something you had said. You were talking about putting yourself in the hole, like putting yourself in a hole, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Now, what I think is interesting about that is there's, like, some wordplay you can do. So, like, putting yourself in a hole, or the hole, you know, metaphorically... but you can also spell that differently. You can spell that with a W, like the whole of something. So W-H-O-L-E. And I think putting yourself, that's what genius, I think, is putting yourself in the whole matter.
Yeah.
Like the whole itself. You're putting itself in W-H-O-L-E.
Right.
You're putting yourself in everything all at once.
Right.
But you're really only immersing your hands because, mm-hmm. like, so Hegel had this notion that, well, Hegel had this notion of, like, two things separating, and that's how being starts, is it starts from one thing that can recognize that it's part of a greater whole. But if those two things unify, then there's nothing, because there's only one whole.
Right.
So you're always constantly becoming the whole, but you can never become the whole because the work is never truly done.
Yeah, never. Yeah. And, you know, there's a one of the things that's important, I think, about people like Carl Jung, you know, when he says that the most fundamental things, most fundamental problems of life can never be truly solved. And, it's just basically a thing of, like,
Well, not only the problems of life are never truly solved, but if they seem like they are something... Did you say something essential has been lost?
Yeah.
Or this is, like, proof that something has been lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess by definition, whatever was lost was essential, because if it weren't there in the first place, it wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is, like... Well, that's... Did you have any, like, other points from Einstein that you wanted to bring up specifically? I don't want to jump around the timeline. I mean, I will.
Yeah, sure.
So he essentially chose to die, which I think is a remarkable fact, was he was just, like, working on his theories, you know, towards the end of his life, and, like, had some issue that could have been solved with surgery, but he essentially said, I'm good,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. I think Bormali also did the same thing. Because,
Who's that?
Bob Marley,
okay. Yeah,
because, at the time of their deathbed, at the time of Bob Marley's deathbed, he also basically rejected modern means of cure.
Mm.
It appeared to me like he chose to die. But, I think it comes from the part of, like, knowing that you're never gonna be or do enough, but knowing that you did so much to the point that you gave all of your even internal body and your physical body.
Mm.
And when it gets to that point, I think it's okay to be able to be like, okay, I'm out.
So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And it's, yeah.
It's like... No, I think I might have lost it. that's unfortunate. But he was just like, he was also not a great dude.
Well, it's like,
he was a person like anyone else? Sorry.
Yeah. You know, I mean, because it's like, he, like the documentary said, he never really had any personal boundaries. So it's like, from that, I don't think, when the person doesn't really necessarily have certain personal boundaries in terms of, you know, morals and all those kind of things, but like having like many women over, you know, while his wife was in the house, sleeping in separate rooms with his wife. I think that was what they really meant when they talked about personal boundaries. Mm-hmm. He never really had any personal boundaries with, like, respect, love life or that kind of thing. But,
because it was strange, because he was a remarkable pacifist, like, throughout his life. Like, yeah. World War I, World War II.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he ever hit any of his wives. I don't think any of that was ever reported or happened.
Yeah.
So.
Which is to say, like, yeah. so he had physical boundaries, but, like, the interpersonal ones.
Yeah.
Were. Well, because, like, what. It's impossible to say, but, like, what would a person think about in that situation? Right. So this is something I've been thinking about a lot, like, with reading, especially now that I'm reading novels again, getting into what it is like for a person in X situation while you're inside the situation.
Right.
You know?
It's like it's just the fact that people are just really different, I think. Because there was not an Einstein before Einstein.
Hmm.
And so, as a matter of that fact, it's like the boundaries that he went towards and kind of tested in order to get to his theories in physics and all that, you know, might have seeped into the boundaries of his interpersonal life.
Interesting.
And so, you know, when that happens, it's like, it's not like there's like some kind of Einstein that's going to come from the future and come back to the past and teach him what's right and what's wrong. You know, it's like he's just going head first or head first into it. And I think that's what life really is. Like, I don't think there's ever necessarily a good decision. There are bad, evil decisions, but I don't think there's ever necessarily a good one. I think things just happen. And I don't think good is the right word to place on them. I think things just happen. And the only thing we can guard against, I think, is truly evil.
Mm. And even then, it's only by being aware of it.
Yeah.
It's the best you can do.
Like, there's enjoyment and like there's pleasure, but it comes with its own bad. So, like, I think good comes with its own bad, but, like, evil, it's just, can just be pure evil. I think there's something about, I think that's something about humanity. Like, I think that's why he was a pacifist. I think, to a degree, I think his soul saw that evil is just purely evil in some circumstances. Like, pure evil is just pure evil. And, but he, I think he looked at it from the point also from that his soul saw it that his goods, the things that he chased in terms of pleasure, also came with its bads. You know, the whole E equals MC squared came with a price in his personal life. But the evils that he saw from like Nazi Germany and like Hitler, that was just like pure evil, and there was nothing coming out of it. And he hated anything related to like military work or any of that. And he never wanted to be inducted or drafted into any military or whatever.
Mm-mm.
And he was just a clear pacifist on that, and he just knew that to be pure evil.
So he, World War One, he tried drafting like a petition. He was like super outspoken in World War One, and like tried drafting a petition. After, like, as a response to some kind of paper published by, like, 96 German scientists in favor of Germany's aggression in World War One, he did his own, he tried having his own petition, which apparently flopped, but, like, he also just didn't care.
He didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like, I think go back to the point of, like, someone like Elon Musk, when Elon Musk says when something is important enough, you do it, even if the odds are not in your favor. And I think that's a rule that most geniuses go by.
Yeah, well, it appears that, like, he was able to recognize evil even though he had many failings as a person. And that let him set his Einstein's compass relatively straight. And then he just kind of followed that until the day he died.
Mm-hmm.
Like, full tilt.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, like, he was a human being and he was a man. And, you know, we are men and we are human beings. And it's like, you know, in those situations, that's what he did. And he was a man, so that's probably what I would have done if I was in those situations, given the same mental capacity and given the same era of the world and time of the world. And that's, like, the best you could say for that kind of person, because that's just the reality of the case.
That the best you can do, the most you can ask of a person is the best they can do. You know, and asking any more of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And just the fact that, look, if I was in his shoes, I would probably do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's just so many factors involved. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, like, in the same situation,
I might even do worse, because it's like he was able to fight against everybody else telling him that narcissism is good. And
That what is good?
No, being a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to just go away from that and, you know, stick to his own ground. Even with his all, like, shortcomings and all his failings.
Well, he also, he didn't really have a chance with Nazism because, like, he was Jewish. So, like, he was out of Germany by 1932, which, relatively speaking, is pretty early. Because, World War II didn't really start until 1939.
Yeah.
But, like, it was bad for Jews in Germany.
Yeah.
Since pretty much 1930.
Right.
Or not since 1930, but starting in 1930.
Right.
And he saw the writing on the wall and had the means to extricate himself from the situation. Right. And then just kind of did.
Exactly.
But it was interesting. He, like, especially the way they portrayed it in the documentary was, like, so he went from Germany, 1932, came to Princeton.
Yeah.
Where it was kind of like essentially walked into heaven, where, like, he could just do whatever he wanted. Like, as long as he was doing his work, he could do whatever he wanted. He had a house, he had, like, constant girlfriends, a wife that just kind of existed, which, like, that's, I guess, I don't know, I guess, like, those personal shortcomings, in a sense, are, like, the cost of genius, because, like, nothing comes for free, which is not to, like, excuse them at all, but it's,
I think it's also, like, the cost of even being a human being, too, even not being a genius, too, it's, like, just being a human being, like, that's just what happens when you're a human being, it's, like, you do crazy things like that. And it's like, there's been numerous blueprints for how we should live life and how we should do this and do that. And it's almost just generally still an experiment in a sense. But
we're all just kind of figuring it out as we go along, type of situation.
Most definitely.
Which, I mean, like, so I guess if you're, I guess, graced with genius, however you want to put that, then your sole pursuit becomes, you know, the thing about which you're a genius.
Right.
At the cost of, well, if you can, I don't know if it's like an actual trade-off or whatnot, but it seems like, you know, in order to basically recreate the world, you know, you're devoting resources differently.
Yeah, most definitely. It comes with the fact that we're limited in our capacity and capability. Like, maybe if there was, like, 60 hours in a day.
Even then.
Like, you'd be like, oh, yes, now I can dedicate 60 hours to my work. So, because I was trying to think of a scenario where it's like, you dedicate 24 hours to your work and you dedicate the other hours to your family or friends or whatever. But it's like, you know, even then it's like, our body is still limited. It's like, even with a million hours in a day, we still decay and die. So it's like, it's still a matter of, like, dedicating resources to things. And sometimes that's just the way it goes. Yeah.
That's just the way it going, you know, in terms of sometimes you recreate the world of physics, but, like, you're pretty much an abject failure as a father and a husband.
Yeah, like, I mean, everything is still, like, a miracle, in a sense.
How do you mean?
Like, the whole thing, like, being alive, you know.
Yeah, that's
like,
the thing.
The whole thing is just really a miracle, so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not really much to be said in those, like, in anything, really. It's just a huge miracle.
That any of it can happen at all.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I think one of the, a concern, or at least a counter argument to that, is like, is it really a miracle if it sucks so much? And I guess the answer is still yes.
Yeah. I mean, because you're not going to see a tiger get up to putting wires together, trying to create a bomb, you know. But human beings, we can do that. So that's a miracle. Horrible, but it's a miracle.
Mm.
Yeah.
Just like how unlikely it is for any of it to happen, but still it's happened anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I hardly have anything to say regarding, like, humanity, in a sense, if I'm being really honest, because there's not much that could be said, but
when you say about humanity, what particular, just humanity itself, just like, just the like, humanity being?
Yeah, I think, like, the more we learn about humanity, it's like, the less that you can really say.
Because it's all just kind of out there?
Yeah, it's like a miracle converged within an experiment, in a sense. Yeah. It's really impressive. But the show goes on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even if one day it ends, we're not going to know it's all ended because we're not going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the dinosaurs, I don't think they're, like, consciously aware that they're gone. Like, they're just gone. They're not like, oh, we're gone. They're just gone, and that's it. Like, we're the ones who are aware that they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, even when we go, like, the show just goes on. Like, we're not going to be like, oh, damn, we're gone. Like, I don't think that's going to be the case.
Which is to say that it's not really worth worrying about?
We should say that it is the case that you can worry about it, and you cannot worry about it at the same time. It's just
worry about it to the degree that you have, like, some measure of personal control over it?
Probably, yeah. To the degree that, you know, you can do what you do.
Yeah. To just try to do what you do, to try to be as good as possible.
Yeah. I tend to avoid words like good.
Yeah.
Cause
just be to the best of your ability, I guess.
Don't tell that to Hitler.
Well, that's the thing, is like, that's where subjective meaning gets a little dicey, right?
Man.
I like the way, so I picked up Maps of Meaning last week. And I like how, so Peterson kind of defines the world as like a form of action,
right?
A forum for action and a place of things.
Mm-hmm.
And in the context of like the forum for action, or rather the place of things, like we kind of have that figured out, but the way we have that figured out is like intersubjective perception,
right?
Which is like basically, and it's interesting that like how I'll come up with like some of these ideas and then realize that like they've been had already, which is, you know, intersubjective. Intersubjective perception,
right,
is basically like the idea of many different points converging on one point,
mm-hmm,
the same point, precisely,
right.
You know, which we've talked about is like the only, oh Lord,
I dropped the mic, so I was trying to take off my socks,
which is pretty much the only way of
get rid of my toenail. But keep going, bro.
Thanks, bro. Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, appreciate you. which is the only way of, like, really assessing truth is, like, if you have enough. Well, even then, that's dangerous, man. Right. Just find it. The hunt for truth is dangerous.
It is dangerous. Like, you have to go all in. That's the problem with it. It's like, you don't get to search for truth if you're not going to go all in. But when you go all in, there are some things that are going to be sacrificed. You know, it's like, in the case of Einstein, I don't think he had the choice to just learn a little bit about physics and discover theory of relativity. I think he had to go all in. And when you go all in, there's a price to be paid for that. But
yeah,
that's just what it is.
That's just what it is. I do have to run, so we're probably going to wrap it here. For sure. Einstein. The man.
Yeah.
A human, and yet superhuman at the same time. All right, well, have a good week, Mike. Sure, have a good week, everybody. Take it easy.
Yep.
Peace.